Thank you, Chairman. It's back on the day from that talk, so I'd like to say good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much for inviting us back to speak to this committee again. Just by way of introductions, my name is James Mallett. I am the main client director at the Jetty, responsible for an overall relationship with the Wealth Council and for the management of pension fund assets. I've been working in this industry now for 25 years, and more broadly, I also look after a relationship with our other local property clients in the Shed, which includes one of the members of Access Group. So working with Access has been an increasing important part of my role in recent months and years. And then sitting to my left, Rafe has introduced Imran Sattar. Imran has worked in investment management for 23 years. He began his career at what was then called Mercury Asset Management. And the reason I mention that is because he began working with the co-founders of Mercury, who subsequently left Mercury to set up Mercury. And Imran arrived actually 3 years ago and has now become one of the managers responsible for the day-to-day management of your assets alongside the other clients that have in our main UK equity strategy. So that would be a good opportunity for you to meet Imran. If you haven't heard from Imran before, the last one time she brings to meeting has been another colleague, Chris Fields. But you remember one of the managers of assets, along with Imran, James Duffel, one of the founders, and a small company called John Kim, which I'll come back to shortly. But what we're proposing to do, you have seen the most recent quarterly report at the end of December, we're not going to look always at how we will be slides in the here. I think there's just the key points that we'd like to convey to you in the slide pack that I've just circulated. And we'll be plenty of time for questions. And if you're very welcome to shout out the questions as we go along, if you said what you should, please don't stand on ceremony. But the first page is actually sort of a reminder of the commitment we in the Jetty have to managing your assets on behalf of the pension fund here and otherwise. And the main message is that Mageli today is the same Mageli that we appointed in 2009. It remains a firm that manages active equity portfolios, taking a view on which are the best stocks to invest in for the medium to long term. We call that active management. And it's all about generating outperformance for our clients over time, which in actual terms for you should mean a larger pension fund valuation over time, therefore managing the amount that you need to put in as counsel to your pension fund and your ability to ultimately pay those future pensions. That's all we're about. That hasn't changed. We remain an independent business. We have no other forms of revenue or custom types to fall back on. So if you're performing the view of our other clients is central to what we do. We continue to think that's the best way to structure our business to ensure that we deliver your requirements over time. Then page two, we've got lots of numbers on it, but the key point of the table at the top, this is a reminder for you of what we do for you in practice. The key thing is we manage for you a UK equity mandate. You can see from that page that at the end of December we were managing £159 million on your behalf. That's a large, important mandate for us, so thank you very much for your continued support and confidence in us for doing that on your behalf. Furthermore, I'm sure you're all aware, there was a significant inflow into this mandate in 2019, so £30 million flowed into this mandate as a company made some order reorganisation to your portfolio. So it's always been gratified to have inflow for clients. So again, all of us, thank you for that. We are very grateful for that. And then even more important than that, you can also see that simply last week this evening, we have passed the 10-year anniversary with you as a client. So thank you for your support over that period. It's been really very kind of advice by me and all my colleagues back at the office. The objective is to outperform the broad UK equity index. That's what you employ us to do. And you can see that the objective is to outperform 2% over time. And The mandate is one where we manage both a combination of UK equities, but also have the flexibility to have an element of the portfolio in non-UK stocks as well. And Imran will talk to you a little bit more about that shortly. But also what we've got on this page is the performance track record. So the middle table illustrates how we perform for you over time. So these are all net of fees. So these are actual, effectively, real returns to the fund that has experienced. We've got periods in a very short term period, like 3 months at the end of December, on the left hand side of that little table, period to the longest period, which is how we've learned a few since the beginning of your appointment, of us back in 2009. You can see that over time, funds are 9.6% per annum, which is 0.7 ahead of the index. So we're ahead over the long term, but we're finding the 2% target that you've set for us. And then you can see to the left hand side that, in particular, over 12 months, 3 years, 5 years, we are behind the index return over those periods. And primarily that has come from the last 3 years of the 2017 onwards, which we will illustrate further in shortly. But I want to be just sort of upfront and clear with you all that we are disappointed at that rate of return. We regard that as clearly far behind, significantly behind what you are expecting of us. You are looking for us to outperform over a really brief period, we are clearly not doing that. So please rest assured that this is not a comfortable position for us to be in. We're not happy about it. And as Imran will come on to describe, we have great confidence and conviction that we will, over time, improve these returns. But we are, I am not happy sitting and reporting these numbers to you. They have had a knock-on effect to the longer term returns. Clearly, it's a puzzle ahead of the longer term piece. But we recognise that we are behind recently. It's a combination of three factors in a nutshell. Some stock selection decisions that we've made have been poor, particularly in some of the larger cap stocks in areas such as utilities, which we'll come on to. Secondly, the element of the portfolio that has historically been a good tailwind for the fund has been our small cap exposure to smaller companies, and that hasn't performed well. There have been some changes there, which I will come on to. And also, as we've discussed with you in previous meetings, we've had a bias towards domestic British United Kingdom businesses and away from some more internationally exposed businesses, of which the UK stock market has a good number. And that's just been the wrong way around over that period as well. So we can certainly identify why we're behind. We think that there's no reason why the long-term agenda investment process, which I've identified, is unchanged, won't get back to using these returns after we're wanting to be over time, but we will come on to that shortly. Page 3 is just a visual description of how the performance track record has evolved for the strategy over time. Now, clearly, this goes back to 2003, which is prior to when you appointed us, but you can also see from the sort of yellowy colour in the middle of that graph, that also includes the period that you have been with us. And as you can see, the most recent 3 year period, which we put in grey on the right hand side, we refer to it as a late economic cycle period. And it has been a period where economies around the world have continued to grow and stock markets have continued to do very well. And you can see at the very bottom right hand side of page 3, last year your fund turned 14%, which was behind the index of 19% in fact. So markets have continued to be very strong. We've continued to take a sort of safety first approach on your behalf, and we've just been, for the reason that I've described, behind the index over those periods. Now, there's a couple of quite a lot of information there in terms of the performance track record, and I recognise we'd like to reiterate we're keen to get this much more back on track and give you some plus signs of these numbers in future meetings. But are there any questions on performance at this stage? And if not, we can always come back to it later, so we're done. In which case, two more slides really from me before I hand over to Imran to read about the speed on the current portfolio and his thoughts on that. Firstly, just to read the team that I described. So, James Duncan and Chris Field are set out on page 4 as long standing members of the team. Imran joined us more recently, and then I touched on the fact that we small caps, especially small companies in the portfolio, headwind. We have made some changes there. So the previous manager of that small cap portfolio left the JV a year ago, and we went through a process last year to recruit a new small cap manager, and we've done that. His name is John King. He joined us from a firm called AXA, also in London, at the back end of last year. So he is now in place, and is bringing lots of good ideas and new energy to that element of the portfolio. So where we feel we've not been doing as good as we would like, we have to be prepared to make changes and there's a bit of a version of that. But that is to be seen in the context of the broader investment resource that we have in the JV, which is on page 5. You can see 21 members of the investment team in total across the spectrum. Most of the problem with these are involved in broad mandate, either directly as in one as through the management role or indirectly through a research role. But we do see ourselves as an organisation that concentrates on researching and understanding the businesses that we're considering investing in. And to do that, we need a strong bench of talented investors to do that. And what we'd like to display on page 5 is that you can see there's a broad range of experiences and depth of research talent within the organisation. We continue to bring graduate trainees, as well as having more staff members like anyone, to bring expertise and perspective to what we do. I'd like to talk to page 6 is a little bit more colour and detail on the last 12-month period, which you will have read about in the quarterly reports that Joe circulated ahead of this meeting. And you will see a little bit more colour there in terms of particular stocks that either helped or hindered performance over time. I touched on that earlier that some of the utility stocks in the portfolio sort of safe, should be particularly safe defensive businesses and being a bit of a headwind, so something like Centrica and Bolon, which you can see towards the bottom of the table, they fall into that camp. Pearson is a media company primarily focused on educational textbooks, and that's mediated for a transition from physical textbooks to a media platform. And that business, we actually continue to like it, but had a tough year last year. At the same time, long-standing stalwarts of the portfolio, such as Tesco, have made an important contribution to performance, and individual stocks that we've identified that we can have particularly strong prospects, such as Serco and Barrick Gold, have also made good contributions. So, in one, we'll give you more colour on the actual portfolio and the content within. But the message from me is that we've gone through a period where markets have been strong, we've been slightly off the pace in terms of our positioning, we're very confident. I'll hand over to Imran now. He will talk to you about how we assess the UK market, how he assesses the portfolio. Joe's also asked us to talk about environmental, social, and governance factors in how we think about managing your assets as well. And Imran will do that too. And again, please be sure to have any questions.
Thank you, James.
Good
afternoon, everyone. Running a part of your portfolio in the summer of last year, helping Chris and James. And I've been at Magellan for a couple of years now, having, as James said earlier, known the founders 23 years ago when we were together at the Mercury Asset Management. So I'm delighted to be here, very conscious that we haven't performed as well as we should have for you, and the three key reasons that James identified, I'm going to touch on give you some reassurance that we're doing something about it, we're not just standing still. And so why don't we start there? The first point that James made is that we have had a UK domestic bias in the portfolio that was deliberate. Frankly, and with hindsight, it was too early. There's just been a huge amount going on, as you all know, around the Brexit process and the UK equity market. For many, I think it's a mistake really, but for many, has been uninvestable. Where we are now, post a very decisive election result, is a situation where I think it's a bit longer to put the UK equity market as a kind of left-tail risk market. Yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty around the world, be it geopolitics in the Middle East, be it what's happening with US and China trade tensions, be it what's going on in Hong Kong. There's just a lot of uncertainty around in the world. And so we no longer see the UK as a differentiated source of risk. I think it's now in the pack, which is a really good thing, particularly when you look at slide 7. So let me just kind of talk you through these two charts. On the left-hand side, it shows the UK market valuation versus the world stock market trading at all-time relative lows. Now that's a big discount, approximately 30%. So the UK stock market trades at a 30% discount to world stock markets. Now given what I've just said about the UK risk environment being in the pack, think as unwarranted. And then on the right-hand side, within that cheap stock market, you have UK domestic exposed shares, because remember the UK stock market is a pretty global stock market. There are some domestic exposed shares, but there are also some international exposed shares. So when you disaggregate the UK stock market, you see UK exposed shares trading at a further 20% discount to international shares. You know, one might call that a double discount. So UK stock market, big discount, and on top of that, domestic shares trading at a further discount. We think that's unwarranted. And we're seeing some really interesting stock-specific opportunities, some of which I'll highlight shortly. You know, really good businesses, very attractive valuations. So yes, we've been too early on that first point about being overweight UK domestics, but I think that's the right place to be. And we remain overweight UK domestics, and you know, that's a high conviction. The second point that James made about small cap, that has been a headwind. And frankly, it ought to be a very nice tailwind to performance, and over the long term, it absolutely has been exactly that, a nice tailwind to performance. In John King, the new small cap manager, we found someone who is interested in looking at identifying really interesting small cap businesses that deliver over the long term. And frankly, we gave the previous small cap manager a little bit too much time. And so we made that decisive decision, and so we expect now the small cap to be a nice tailwind performance, as it has been in the long term. And that third point about making a few small, making some stock-specific errors, you know, the Centricas of this world, the Pearsons of this world, that's us putting our hands up and saying we have made mistakes. And it's now incumbent on us not to make those same mistakes. So when you look at slides 8 and 9, you know, these are businesses that we've bought recently in the fund. So these are good examples of two examples here of world-class businesses where we think profit growth looks very, very attractive. And you know, these are the kind of businesses that we think we ought to be invested in, that will drive profit growth and generate good returns for you as our clients. And so I'm just going to briefly talk about these stocks. Interrupt me if you have any questions. But AB Foods is a conglomerate. It owns some really interesting businesses. Primark, I'm sure you've all heard of. That is a brilliant business. You know, in a retail world, which has been really challenging, we've all heard about the pain on the high street, lots of retail businesses really struggling. But Primark actually has done really well. And that's because I think the retail world is polarizing. On the one hand, value is winning, and at the other end of the spectrum, luxury is winning. But everyone else in the middle, the mass market operators are really struggling. And so in Primark, we found a really good business that has good growth prospects, particularly in taking that business overseas. So it now has stores in Europe, and it's also recently launched in the US. I'm hoping to be in New York in March on a business trip. I'm going to go and see the Brooklyn store of Primark. I know it's a store that's doing really well. Kick the tires and just make sure that it's a really good store. And then it's not just about Primark. Also, AB Foods owns some brilliant grocery brands like Ovaltine and Twinings. Again, brands I hope you've heard of and are big consumers of. These are brilliant brands making really high margins with good growth prospects, not just in the UK, but also overseas. You know, these are businesses that have global secular trends, which I think are really powerful and will provide lots of growth. AB Foods also has some other smaller assets. There's a bit of hidden value in the sugar assets, for example, at AB Foods. And it's a business we think will drive good profit growth over the long term. And lastly, And importantly, it has a balance sheet that's really very strong. In fact, it's net cash. And you know that most businesses have, you know, an element of debt in a capital structure. But this is a business that is net cash. And I really like the optionality because, you know, in a world where growth is hard to come by, a company that has a strong balance sheet can do clever things when the opportunity presents itself.
With regard to Capmore, how will you scrutinise their ethical manufacturing?
Yeah, that's a really good question because I absolutely understand that ESG is, you know, right front and centre of everything in all discussion. But actually, in general, we've been thinking about responsible capitalism, that's what we call it, for quite a long time now. And I think it's important to not think of them differently. But when you think about an investment case for a company, it's really important to think about, yes, the profit growth, yes, the quality of the business, and the management team and how, you know, how smart they are, but also, absolutely, about the sustainability agenda of these businesses. And you're right to identify, Primark has, you know, I think unfairly in the press been criticised for its supply chain initiatives. Because I think what, I mean, obviously it had that Bangladesh incident a few years ago, but this is a management team that really does care. This is a management team that spent a lot of time post that incident making sure that it can now audit the whole supply chain. And it's not just about the supply chain, it's also kind of, it's a leader in sustainable cotton, for example. It's really good, it has really good processes now where it can trace the cotton all the way back to its source. And so, you know, Primark, you know, I think in the press it's seen a retailer that doesn't really care, but actually, you know, when our discussions with the company are actually really fruitful. In fact, not our last meeting, but the monthly meeting, we spent 75% of our time in that meeting just focused on your question, because it's really important. And I think Primark has learned a lot from that incident a few years ago, and it's really moved the business on. In fact, it's just about to have recycling boxes in all of its stores. It's trying at the moment, but it's about to have that all of its stores. So for Primark, it's absolutely front and centre of everything they're doing. I think they're doing a really good job. It's just in classic AB Foods fashion, they do the work and then shout later. So they've done a lot of work, and now there's a big agenda to make sure that all the consumers and all stakeholders know what they're doing.
Mentioned
the recycling
and
that,
how fast are you moving ahead on global conditions so that they're not manufacturing clothing and
buildings
that fall down on top of
their employees? Indeed, indeed. They've made a huge amount of progress. You know, I think if there was a criticism a few years ago, this is before we invested in AB Foods, to be clear, we were invested post that incident. And post us seeing the development of the name, I've actually known John Mason, the founder, for over 20 years. In fact, one of my first ever meetings with the company was with John Mason. He's the current director now, as he was 20 years ago. And over time, it's very clear that, you know, the light for us, it's really confronted central what they're thinking. And it's only after we've seen the progress the company's made in making sure it can track and trace the whole supply chain that we've decided to invest in the foods. Because you're absolutely right to identify it's really important, not just for us as shareholders in the business, and for you as our clients, but also for the consumer. Because if you don't have strong ESG credentials in the retail world, and frankly, in all walks of life, that's a big problem. I think you want a story of a big problem further down the line. Now, I think Primark is ahead of the curve, certainly ahead of the pack versus the competition. But it just doesn't shout as hard as it should do. And we've talked to the company about this, and they're going to produce a big splash, both in the press and the way they talk to the consumer. In fact, in the next 2 or 3 months, they're going to have a very specific investor day for Primark, and sustainability will be, the big topic.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think we must move on. I'm conscious of the time.
Of course, yes. So that's a first example of a new position that we're really excited about. The next one is Booking.com. That's an online travel portal business. I'll keep this really brief, but it's the global leader in online hotel bookings. It really is a world-class business. It has really high margins. It's very capital light and has really good growth potential. James alluded to our ability to invest outside of the UK market, and this is a good example of a business that we bought that is listed in the US. I'm on that trip to New York in March. We'll be meeting with the company and discussing investment deals. But very excited about that. And then on slides 10 and 11, we really do take our stewardship or the fund that you've entrusted with us seriously, and we absolutely have been talking about responsible capitalism for many years now, in fact from the founding of the business, and it really is the heart of everything we do. And I want to kind of reiterate the message I made earlier. It is not the right approach to think about the investment case and then think about ESG. It is absolutely part and parcel of looking at a company. It's no different. There are balance sheet risks, there are company and industry risks, and there are ESG risks, and all of those are important. And so we think very holistically about ESG. Because that's absolutely the right thing to do. There are a few examples here, I'm just crossing the tide, but I'll also give you a strong reassurance that it's very, very important to us, but not just because it's been a month, it has been important to us, and we'll be talking about this for a number of years now.
Can we spend just a few minutes talking specifically about the exposure to climate change risk? Your significant holders in BP and oil and gas. And I think the committee would benefit from your views on that area.
Yeah. That's a good question. So, when I think about BP and Shell, they are large holding for us, but ones that have been we've been reducing. And part of the reason why we've been reducing the positions is that we think that. On one hand, they're part of the solution, because clearly we need to reduce carbon emissions. And you've all heard of what BP talked about this week. In fact, about half an hour, Bernard Looney, the CEO of BP, was coming to our office to discuss exactly that. So we're going to discuss that in more detail. But it's very clear that the big oil company, BP in particular, risk very, very seriously. And I think that transition is going to be quite a difficult one. Because they're so large, they have to be part of the solution. And it's only when they take it seriously will they be able to offer a solution to get carbon emissions. But BP yesterday talked about getting to net zero by 2050. Now, I know that's quite a long way away, but BP is a leader in the whole space of committing to get to net zero carbon emissions by 2050. Now, that's a big, bold statement. We haven't had enough detail, and hopefully in half an hour we'll get more detail back in London. But that's a really good first step. But to my point earlier about reducing the position, part of the reason why we have been reducing the position is because within that transition, whilst it will be the absolute right thing to do, it may be one that's quite painful. The reason is because the current oil and gas projects, as we all know, are highly carbon intensive, but they're also high return. The newer green projects are clearly better on a carbon intensive perspective, but are much lower return. And to make that transition from high return carbon intensive to low return green, that's a painful one for shareholders. So we're very conscious about that. So we have reduced positions. Firstly, given our view that ESG is becoming more and more important, it's really important to us. But secondly, also from a pure return perspective, we think that is quite a painful one. But we retain positions because we think, if we all walked away from investments in the oil and gas sector, ultimately these businesses are probably owned by a private entity, and they are not going to be interested in tackling what is critical to tackle the carbon emissions. So we think there is a role to play for asset managers, but we've got to hold these companies accountable, making that transition head in the right direction. But the reduction of positions have been deliberate, partly because of the return dynamic I just mentioned, but also the fact that we were very conscious that this is going to be more and more important, not just for investors, not just for users, clients, but for consumers in general. So hopefully that gives you a sense of what we've been doing in the portfolios. I'll perhaps just end on the outlook. So on slides 12 and 13, I talked to you about that double discount for UK equities. So that's really very attractive. It's, I've been in this industry for 23 years. It's rare to be able to find the kind of businesses that you see highlighted on slide 13 in combination with a double discount chart that I had showed you earlier. But being able to find brilliant businesses and at cheap valuations, that's quite rare. And that's why I'm really excited about the UK equities. And actually, you can see on slide 12, that is one of the reasons why you've seen all of these things be taken over the last 12 or 18 months. A lot of asset allocators have been worried about allocating money to UK equities, but there are a lot of corporate buyers that are picking off really attractive businesses at decent valuations. We're just as excited as those corporates about the UK. And then the slides 14, 15 give a bit more detail, just in the interest of time, I'll skip over that unless there are questions, and perhaps summarise on slide 16. So if there are a few key messages that I'd like to leave you with. Firstly, yes, it's been painful for the last 2 or 3 years. UK equities uninvestable, Brexit risks, political risks, risks galore in the UK market. Now, when I look at where we are now, I no longer think the UK equity market is tailless. It's in the pack now. Of course, there remains risk. We still have to do a trade deal. And you will have read this morning about the political changes and the cabinet changes that we've had. Yes, there remains some political risk. Yes, there remains some trade negotiation risk. But I no longer see the UK equity market as left tail risk. It's in the pack. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that double discount point. UK equity market is cheap. And it's cheap alongside being able to find really interesting, advantaged businesses that will grow profits, whatever the economic weather. I do think we live in a low growth, low inflation, and low interest rate world. And the extent to which you can find good businesses that can just grow profits, irrespective of whatever the macro throws at them, is really attractive. And if I were to summarise how this portfolio is positioned, I would talk about two things. One is a kind of UK domestic bias that we've been talking about for the last 2 or 3 years, but even more importantly, is owning a collection of businesses that are very attractive and are high are high quality, good return businesses that are Darwinian winners. You know, in a world where the cost of finance is really cheap and there's plenty of technological disruption, the strong are getting stronger and the weak are getting weaker. And this is a portfolio full of advantaged businesses that will grow in profit whatever the economic level. And yeah, that's the key message I'd like to leave with you today, is the attractions of the UK equity market and a collection of companies that are really attractive. You know, this portfolio will make one that is about stock picking. You know, come back to, you know, right, the first message that we gave you, we're not happy with the performance. We have not delivered fees in the last 2 or 3 years. Now, I know the long-term track record is very good at Magelli. We are absolutely not happy with the last 3 years. But the focus is, you know, what we're good at doing, which is picking stocks. As I said, it's a portfolio full of interesting, advantaged businesses that will deliver profit growth.
Thank you very much. I'm conscious of the time. As you know, we have another session starting in a half an hour, so are there any quick questions, please? Yes. Vanessa and then Andrew.
Quick technical question. I don't know whether we invest in Ocado or not. How do these enormous, enormous telephone number salary figures, you know, just what control you say you talk to these companies and tell them when their chief executives aren't performing, I do that. Just what sort of control is there? And secondly, what effect is the loss of Savage Abbey going to have?
So I missed the second part of the question. Oh, yes, yeah. To your first question, we are playing an increasing role in making sure, and this is in the G in the ESG, making sure that chief executives are paid sensibly. Now, there are some very, very bright people running the businesses that we own, and they create enormous amounts of shareholder value for you, the ultimate shareholders. And you know, we think that they ought to be paid well, because you know, we do live in a competitive world. But there are others in the market that don't really create huge amounts of value, and it's incumbent on us to make sure that they don't get paid well at all. So the point being is differentiation. I mean, companies and the CEOs of the companies that are creating value for you, you know, we think they ought to get paid well. But the companies that aren't creating value, you know, they should be penalized. And just one point where we've made a big impact over the last couple of years is pension contributions. We think it is unfair for a CEO to get paid 30% of his or her salary as a contribution in percentage terms, when you know the rest of the staff are paid 7 or 8 or 10%. And so we deliberately asked many of our companies to equalise pension contributions. So it's important to us, and we think it's the right thing to do to make sure that there's a level playing field for pension contributions, but recognise that you do have to pay for people who add value, ensuring critically that you don't pay for people who aren't doing. So we do not own shares in Ocado.
So you do?
Don't own shares in Ocado. It was a question of to own shares in Ocado, the food.
They're going to pay themselves something, and they've lost $222 million, and they're going to pay themselves more than that in executive pay, and the mind just boggles, but never mind.
We don't appreciate it.
No. My other question was about Savvy Javid.
Yes.
Do you think that will have an effect on the stock markets?
Yeah. I mean, I...
Just briefly,
yes.
So we do figure out.
Yeah. He's a very simple chap. His replacement is a very clever idea. I don't know him as well. I don't think it's going to have a huge impact. That said, change so fast after the election is not ideal, but clearly there was a personal conflict there. So I don't think it's a huge issue, but in any case, his replacement is very smart.
Andrew, can we make this the final question, please?
Two comments, Paul. One, it's good to hear that you're talking to people, but make sure that those warm words are turned into change profiles and that they're not doing what I used to do with doing my homework. You do leave it to 10 o'clock at night the day before. Net zero by 2050 could be a lot still by 2049. We need to see companies, and I hope you'll be pressing that. Because it exposes organisations to those political paradigm shifts. So if BP has not got a change profile that's properly moving towards net zero by 2050, which is a bit late anyway, but and if there is this political paradigm shift globally, they will be exposed to not being able to catch up in a sense. Will happen to do a lot more. The other thing is, I love your phrase grinding Darwinism, but it worries me that you might then be picking ones which go on the evolutionary cul-de-sacs. I won't ask you to explain what you do to make sure you don't see those evolutionary cul-de-sacs, but just I want to be sure that you were aware that just because something is strong doesn't mean it will remain strong forever. You are really alert. Because in the last 20, 30 years of the .com kind of thing, we've seen a lot of very strong companies which nobody now can even remember were around.
That's very difficult to do. Do the second one first. I've talked to my clients for 20 years about trying to find businesses which have an ecological moat. It's one thing, a business having good returns on capital, it's another thing sustaining those over a long period of time. You make a very important point because economic moats can weaken. And I've got a set of stocks which we are significantly underweighted in the fund, the consumer goods companies, the Unilevers of this world, the Reckitt Benckisers of this world, the Diageos of this world, the P&Gs and the Nestes of this world. But I think they're actually slowly losing their economic moat. And so those are businesses that are deemed to be excellent businesses, very vital capital and professional. I think that moat is weakening. Now, there are some exceptions. I think Unilever actually has a really interesting valuation argument, so we actually bought a few shares recently. But as a whole, there's a good example, where Darwinism is absolutely the right phrase to associate with those companies. Could they be going to cool this head? I'm not quite sure, but I'm pretty sure that the moats are weakening. So you're absolutely right to identify, part of our job is to find those brilliant businesses that can sustain those returns, but not to become complacent to miss the big picture trends and to ensure that they don't go down the cool effects. And then to your first point, of course it's not enough. They have to go faster, and I'm sure in 15 minutes' time, when the colleagues are meeting with the CEO, they will be telling you exactly that. We also want more detail, because the one thing that the statement back yesterday was detail. And let's give PK a little bit of credit, because they are a leader in this statement they made. It's the all of major globally that's gone the further. So, we like what they're doing. It's a little bit slow. We want them to go faster. We want more detail. But there is a conundrum there, which we have to also think about, that return point that I made earlier. You go from a high return business to a low return business. It's not a nice path. So they have to ensure that the new age fuels, they have to get returns with that. So there's a lot of complexity, a lot of moving parts, but we have to be all very thoughtful about how we approach it. Engagement is really important. Thank you.
Okay. Fine. Well, on behalf of the committed, and I thank you, James and Imran, for coming along this afternoon and speaking to us and being interrogated. It was good to see you. We have got another couple of items to go through, so if you want to slip away, then that's fine. So thank you very much for coming, and see you again next time.
Yes, thank you very much for inviting us. It was a pleasure, and yes, we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Good to see you.